Chapter 16. Could not miss, if they had occasion. I carried on shore with me the young man whose mother was starved to death, and the maid also. She was a sober, well-educated, religious young woman, and behaved so inoffensively that everyone gave her a good word. She had, indeed, an unhappy life with us, there being no woman in the ship but herself, but she bore it with patience. After a while, seeing things so well ordered, and in so fine a way of thriving upon my island, and considering that they had neither business, nor acquaintance in the East Indies, or reason for taking so long a voyage, both of them came to me, and desired I would give them leave to remain on the island, and be entered among my family, as they called it. I agreed to this readily. And they had a little plot of ground allotted to them, where they had three tents or houses set up, surrounded with a basket work, palisadoed like Atkins, adjoining to his plantation. Their tents were contrived, so that they had each of them a room apart to lodge in, and a middle tent like a great storehouse, to lay their goods in, and to eat, and to drink in. And now the other two Englishmen removed their habitation to the same place, and so the island was divided into three colonies, and no more viz. The Spaniards, with old Friday and the first servants, at my habitation under the hill, which was, in a word, the capital city, and where they had so enlarged, and extended their works, as well under, as on the outside of the hill, that they lived, though perfectly concealed, yet full at large. Never was there such a little city in a wood, and so hid, in any part of the world. For I verify believe, that 1,000 men might have ranged the island a month, and, if they had not known there was such a thing, and looked on purpose for it, they would not have found it. Indeed the trees stood so thick and so close, and grew so fast woven one into another, that nothing but cutting them down first, could discover the place, except the only two narrow entrances where they went in, and out could be found, which was not very easy. One of them was close down at the water's edge, on the side of the creek, and it was afterwards above 200 yards to the place, and the other was up a ladder at twice, as I have already described it, and they had also a large wood, thickly planted, on the top of the hill, containing above an acre, which grew apace, and concealed the place from all discovery there, with only one narrow place between two trees, not easily to be discovered, to enter on that side. The other colony was that of Will Atkins, where there were four families of Englishmen, I mean those I had left there, with their wives and children, three savages that were slaves, the widow and children of the Englishman that was killed, the young man and the maid, and, by the way, we made a wife of her, before we went away. There were besides the two carpenters and the tailor, whom I brought with me for them. Also the smith, who was a very necessary man to them, especially as a gunsmith, to take care of their arms, and my other man, whom I called Jack of all trades, who was in himself as good almost as 20 men, for he was not only a very ingenious fellow, but a very merry fellow, and before I went away we married him to the honest maid, that came with the youth in the ship I mentioned before. And now I speak of marrying, it brings me naturally, to say something of the French ecclesiastic, that I had brought with me out of the ship's crew whom I took up at sea. It is true this man was a Roman, and perhaps it may give offense to some hereafter, if I leave anything extraordinary upon record of a man whom, before I begin, I must, to set him out in just colors, represent in terms very much to his disadvantage, in the account of Protestants, as, first, that he was a Papist, secondly, a Popish priest, and thirdly, a French Popish priest. But justice demands of me to give him a due character, and I must say, he was a grave, sober, pious, and most religious person, exact in his life, extensive in his charity, and exemplary in almost everything he did. What then can anyone say against being very sensible of the value of such a man, notwithstanding his profession? though it may be my opinion perhaps, as well as the opinion of others who shall read this, that he was mistaken. The first hour that I began to converse with him, after he had agreed to go with me to the East Indies, I found reason to delight exceedingly in his conversation, and he first began with me about religion in the most obliging manner imaginable. "Sir," says he, "you have not only under God and at that he crossed his breast, saved my life, but you have admitted me to go this voyage in your ship, and by your obliging civility have taken me into your family, giving me an opportunity of free conversation. Now, sir, you see by my habit what my profession is, and I guess by your nation what yours is. I may think it is my duty, and doubtless it is so, to use my utmost endeavors, on all occasions, to bring all the souls I can to the knowledge of the truth, and to embrace the Catholic doctrine. But as I am here under your permission, and in your family, I am bound, in justice to your kindness as well as in decency and good manners, to be under your government. And therefore I shall not, without your leave, enter into any debate on the points of religion in which we may not agree, further than you shall give me leave." I told him his carriage was so modest, that I could not but acknowledge it, that it was true we were such people as they call heretics, but that he was not the first Catholic I had conversed with without falling into inconveniences, or carrying the questions to any height in debate, that he should not find himself the worse used for being of a different opinion from us, and if we did not converse without any dislike on either side, it should be his fault, not ours. He replied that he thought all our conversation might be easily separated from disputes, that it was not his business to cap principles with every man he conversed with, and that he rather desired me to converse with him as a gentleman than as a religionist, and that, if I would give him leave at any time, to discourse upon religious subjects, he would readily comply with it, and that he did not doubt, but I would allow him also, to defend his own opinions as well as he could, but that without my leave he would not break in upon me with any such thing. He told me further, that he would not cease to do all that became him, in his office as a priest, as well as a private Christian, to procure the good of the ship, and the safety of all that was in her, and though, perhaps, we would not join with him, and he could not pray with us, he hoped he might pray for us, which he would do upon all occasions. In this manner we conversed, and as he was of the most obliging, gentlemanlike behavior, so he was, if I may be allowed to say so, a man of good sense, and, as I believe, of great learning. He gave me a most diverting account of his life, and of the many extraordinary events of it, of many adventures which had befallen him in the few years that he had been abroad in the world, and particularly, it was very remarkable, that in the voyage he was now engaged in he had had the misfortune to be 5 times shipped and unshipped, and never to go to the place whither any of the ships he was in were at first designed. That his first intent was to have gone to Martinico, and that he went on board a ship bound thither at St. Malo, but being forced into Lisbon by bad weather, the ship received some damage, by running aground in the mouth of the river Tagus, and was obliged to unload her cargo there, but finding a Portuguese ship there bound for the Madeiras, and ready to sail, and supposing he should meet with a ship there bound to Martinico, he went on board, in order to sail to the Madeiras. But the master of the Portuguese ship being but an indifferent mariner, had been out of his reckoning, and they drove to Faial, where, however, he happened to find a very good market for his cargo, which was corn, and therefore resolved not to go to the Madeiras, but to load salt at the Isle of May, and to go away to Newfoundland. He had no remedy in this exigence, but to go with the ship, and had a pretty good voyage as far as the banks, so they call the place, where they catch the fish, where, meeting with a French ship bound from France to Quebec, and from thence to Martinico, to carry provisions, he thought he should have an opportunity to complete his first design, but when he came to Quebec, the master of the ship died, and the vessel proceeded no further, So the next voyage he shipped himself for France, in the ship that was burned when we took them up at sea, and then shipped with us for the East Indies, as I have already said. Thus he had been disappointed in five voyages, all, as I may call it, in one voyage, besides what I shall have occasion to mention further of him. But I shall not make digression into other men's stories which have no relation to my own, so I return to what concerns our affair in the island. He came to me one morning, for he lodged among us all the while we were upon the island, and it happened to be just when I was going to visit the Englishman's colony, at the furthest part of the island. I say, he came to me, and told me, with a very grave countenance, that he had for 2 or 3 days desired an opportunity of some discourse with me, which he hoped would not be displeasing to me, because he thought it might in some measure correspond with my general design, which was the prosperity of my new colony, and perhaps might put it, at least more than he yet thought it was, in the way of God's blessing. I looked a little surprised at the last of his discourse, and turning a little short, "How, sir," said I, "can it be said that we are not in the way of God's blessing, after such visible assistances and deliverances as we have seen here, and of which I have given you a large account? If you had pleased, sir," said he, with a world of modesty, and yet great readiness, "to have heard me, you would have found no room to have been displeased, much less to think so hard of me, that I should suggest that you have not had wonderful assistances and deliverances. And I hope, on your behalf, that you are in the way of God's blessing, and your design is exceeding good, and will prosper. But, sir, though it were more so than is even possible to you, yet there may be some among you that are not equally right in their actions. And you know that in the story of the children of Israel, when the Chan in the camp removed God's blessing from them, and turned his hand so against them, that 36 of them, though not concerned in the crime, were the objects of divine vengeance, and bore the weight of that punishment." I was sensibly touched with this discourse, and told him his inference was so just, and the whole design seemed so sincere, and was really so religious in its own nature, that I was very sorry I had interrupted him, and begged him to go on. And, in the meantime, because it seemed that what we had both to say might take up some time, I told him I was going to the Englishman's plantations, and asked him to go with me, and we might discourse of it by the way. He told me he would the more willingly wait on me thither, because there partly the thing was acted which he desired to speak to me about. So we walked on, and I pressed him to be free and plain with me in what he had to say. "Why then, sir," said he, "be pleased to give me leave to lay down a few propositions, as the foundation of what I have to say, that we may not differ in the general principles, though we may be of some differing opinions in the practice of particulars. First, sir, though we differ in some of the doctrinal articles of religion, and it is very unhappy it is so, especially in the case before us, as I shall show afterwards, yet there are some general principles in which we both agree, that there is a God, and that this God having given us some stated general rules for our service and obedience, we ought not willingly and knowingly to offend him, either by neglecting to do what he has commanded, or by doing what he has expressly forbidden. And let our different religions be what they will, this general principle is readily owned by us all, that the blessing of God does not ordinarily follow presumptuous sinning against his command. And every good Christian will be affectionately concerned to prevent any that are under his care living in a total neglect of God and his commands. It is not your men being Protestants, whatever my opinion may be of such, that discharges me from being concerned for their souls, and from endeavoring, if it lies before me, that they should live in as little distance from enmity with their Maker as possible, especially if you give me leave to meddle so far in your circuit." I could not yet imagine what he aimed at, and told him I granted all he had said, and thanked him that he would so far concern himself for us, and begged he would explain the particulars of what he had observed, that like Joshua, to take his own parable, I might put away the accursed thing from us. Why then, sir, says he, I will take the liberty you give me, and there are three things, which, if I am right, must stand in the way of God's blessing upon your endeavors here, and which I should rejoice, for your sake and their own, to see removed. And, sir, I promise myself, that you will fully agree with me in them all, as soon as I name them, especially because I shall convince you, that every one of them may, with great ease, and very much to your satisfaction, be remedied. First, sir, says he, you have here four Englishmen, who have fetched women from among the savages, and have taken them as their wives, and have had many children by them all, and yet are not married to them after any stated legal manner, as the laws of God and man require. To this, sir, I know, you will object, that there was no clergyman or priest of any kind to perform the ceremony, nor any pen and ink, or paper, to write down the contract of marriage, and have it signed between them. And I know also, sir, what the Spaniard governor has told you, I mean of the agreement, that he obliged them to make when they took those women, viz., that they should choose them out by consent, and keep separately to them, which, by the way, is nothing of a marriage, no agreement with the women as wives, but only an agreement among themselves, to keep them from quarreling. But, sir, the essence of the sacrament of matrimony, so he called it, being a Roman, consists, not only in the mutual consent of the parties, to take one another as man and wife, but in the formal and legal obligation, that there is in the contract, to compel the man and woman, at all times, to own and acknowledge each other, obliging the man to abstain from all other women, to engage in no other contract while he subsists, and, on all occasions, as ability allows, to provide honestly for them and their children, and to oblige the women to the same or like conditions, on their side. Now, sir, says he, these men may, when they please, or when occasion presents, abandon these women, disown their children, leave them to perish, and take other women, and marry them, while these are living. And here he added, with some warmth, how, sir, is God honored in this unlawful liberty? And how shall a blessing succeed your endeavors in this place, however good in themselves, and however sincere in your design, while these men, who at present are your subjects, under your absolute government and dominion, are allowed by you to live in open adultery? I confess I was struck with the thing itself, but much more with the convincing arguments he supported it with. But I thought to have got off my young priest, by telling him that all that part was done, when I was not there, and that they had lived, so many years with them now, that if it was adultery, it was past remedy, nothing could be done in it now. Sir, says he, asking your pardon for such freedom, you are right in this, that, it being done in your absence, you could not be charged with that part of the crime. But, I beseech you, flatter not yourself, that you are not, therefore, under an obligation to do your utmost now, to put an end to it. You should legally and effectually marry them, and as, sir, my way of marrying may not be easy to reconcile them to, though it will be effectual, even by your own laws, so your way may be as well before God, and as valid among men. I mean by a written contract signed by both man and woman, and by all the witnesses present, which all the laws of Europe would decree to be valid. I was amazed to see so much true piety, and so much sincerity of zeal, besides the unusual impartiality in his discourse, as to his own party or church, and such true warmth for preserving people, that he had no knowledge of, or relation to from transgressing the laws of God. But recollecting what he had said of marrying them by a written contract, which I knew he would stand to, I returned it back upon him, and told him I granted all that he had said to be just, and on his part very kind, that I would discourse with the men upon the point now, when I came to them, and I knew no reason why they should scruple to let him marry them all, which I knew well enough would be granted to be as authentic and valid in England, as if they were married by one of our own clergymen. I then pressed him to tell me what was the second complaint which he had to make, acknowledging that I was very much his debtor for the first, and thanking him heartily for it. He told me he would use the same freedom and plainness in the second, and hoped I would. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.